Nay about stories, you know. When I find a story, I say, okay, I want to write it.
Okay, and if people want to read more of your work or hear more of your work, what do they need to do?
My Twitter, I have some work in English. My name is Natalia Messer with double S, and you can find my work in German, in Spanish, and in English. Yeah.
That's wonderful.
Right, well, Natalia Messer, thank you so much for coming by KBOO and doing all the work you're doing. It was great talking to you.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you, Natalia. It's great to have you.
Thank you.
Let me tell you the story of a soldier named Dan.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Art of the Protest Song, Sunday, November 12th at 2 p.m. at the Oregon Historical Society in Portland. The Art of the Protest Song partners the Oregon Historical Society with four local folk musicians to present a showcase of popular and topical protest songs from the Kennedy era, as well as original songs focused on contemporary issues. This event is free and open to the public. Again, that's the Art of the Protest Song, Sunday, November 12th at 2 p.m. at the Oregon Historical Society, 1200 Southwest Park Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events. Faces without hope and without homes. And the guns they grow.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of SPRIG, presented by the Portland Folk Music Society, November 17th in Portland. SPRIG is a gathering of musicians from all over the world who happen to come together in Portland. See how this quartet pulls their audience from Eastern Europe to the cafes of 1930s Paris and the dark hollows of Appalachia. Again, that's SPRIG, presented by the Portland Folk Music Society, Friday, November 17th at 7:30 p.m. at the Colonial Heights Presbyterian Church, 2828 Southeast Stevens Street, Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events. We don't want our fingers in the pot.
Good evening and welcome to Transpositive. We are here tonight with Guinevere de Amblia, and we're also going to be talking to Steve Cromer. We're going to be talking about the Transgender Day of Remembrance. There's a lot going on, and I want to make sure to cover all the bases and let everyone know about what's happening this month with Transgender Day of Remembrance. There's several events going on. The really big one is the event that's going to happen at PCC Cascadia, and that's going to be on the actual Transgender Day of Remembrance, which is November 20th, and that's being organized by some really great folks out of the Q Center. They're going to be on next week during the queer programming block to talk specifically about why we need to support queer and trans people of color and why Transgender Day of Remembrance is all about trans and queer people of color. We've also got an event, the Multnomah Friends Meeting House is hosting an event on November 20th over at the Friends Meeting House on over on the east side, and I'll have more details and information about that at the end of the show. There's also a vigil that's being organized for Pioneer Square. It's going to be happening at the same time as the PCC Cascadia event. That's going to be in Pioneer Square on November 20th. So if you can't make it over PCC Cascadia, you can always stop in downtown and join the vigil that's happening. There's also an event in Vancouver that's being organized by a member of the Northwest Gender Alliance. So if you're in Vancouver, we'll have some more information at the end of the show about that. And then on right now with us, we've got Steve Cromer. And Steve is working with First United Methodist Church on a trans vigil and interfaith service for Transgender Day of Remembrance. Steve, are you there? Steve is not there yet. Okay, well, we will come back to Steve in a minute. Let's go to you first, Gwen, and then we'll have Steve on in a few minutes. So, yeah, why don't you join us? I'm really excited tonight to have Guinevere with us tonight. Gwen is a longtime friend of the community, someone who's been through a lot of the groups, and I think is a well-known figure within the trans community. Gwen, welcome.
Thanks, Emma.
Thanks. Gwen, can you talk a little bit about what does Transgender Day of Remembrance mean to you? Why do you think it's important for us to acknowledge it?
Well, you know, it's a moment out of the year that we can stop and reflect on what's going on, not just in our community, but in our society as a whole. Gives us a moment to consider, just consider the state of our consciousness, the state of our society. I was looking today at some statistics, and I was surprised to see that there has been more transgender murders this year in the United States to date than there were last year for the whole year. And it's like, you know, I guess given our current state, it's not surprising, but it's still, I thought we were on the downward slope of that. You know, I thought that there was more acceptance, more consciousness, around acceptance of not just transgender or LGBTQ people, but everybody. And it's it's a little, excuse me, saddening to see that. That's, you know, seems like it's going in reverse.
Mm-hmm. So we do have Steve on the line now. So we're going to bring Steve in, and all three of us are going to have a conversation. So we're going to talk about Transgender Day of Remembrance. We're going to talk about this vigil. We're going to talk about some of your practice that you do to center yourself, and we're just going to have a conversation. Steve, are you here?
I am.
Oh, great. Well, welcome, Steve. It's so nice to have you on Transpositive. Thank you for joining us.
Well, thank you for having me.
Steve, first of all, can you tell us about the event that's happening on November 19th?
To the degree that I know, I certainly can. So on November 19th, we are planning a vigil at Terry Schrunk Plaza, and I believe we will have a number of speakers, both from the trans community as well as other members of the community, people in support. Then my understanding is we will conduct a march up to Portland First United Methodist Church, where there will be an interfaith service honoring the transgender people who have been murdered for being transgender.
And why do you think this is happening? Can you tell me a little bit about your role at First United Methodist Church, and why did you feel this was an important event to participate in?
Sure. My wife and I are the chairs of the Reconciling Ministry at Portland First United Methodist Church. We're real proud of our church and proud of the opportunity to serve in that capacity. And through members, one in particular, the member that you and I, the person that you and I have in common, Emma, Don, started learning about more specifically issues that affected the trans community. And I was, you know, I guess naive, and that naivety led to, you know, some shock at the current state of awareness and lack of equality for the trans community. I just didn't understand the level of violence that trans people have been subjected to. So it became clear that we needed to, if we are truly reconciling, that we needed to get involved in this and try to be helpful partners and move society in that direction. The person I heard speaking before I came on the line, you know, talked about the current political climate and the seeming step backward, and it is definitely, that's definitely something that we are aware of and are going to actively fight against.
It seems like, yeah, it seems like now more than ever, it's really important to fight for trans rights and to support trans folks, because there's still so much marginalization within the trans community, which is why I think it's so great when different communities step up and say, hey, we're going to do something for Transgender Day of Remembrance. We're going to be visible and we're going to show that we care. So thank you.
Well, it really, as a Christian community, it's the least we can do. The least we can do. If we hold ourselves up to Christian values and want to live that life, then we are charged with welcoming and making whole all members of society. That really is the beginning and ending of what we need to do as Christians. And so, it's a matter of conscience. I'm going to be involved because I must be involved.
Great. So that's going to be at starting at Terry Shrunk Plaza on November 19th at 12:30. Is it?
Yeah, we are going to. My understanding is that we are going to convene then and start pulling people together, pulling people in. And certainly begin speaking by 1 o'clock, if not before. And then as the speaking concludes, we will march, I guess is the word, up to Portland First Church, which is on, 18th? I know how to get there.
It's about a mile.
Mm-hmm. And
hopefully we'll have good weather.
18th and Jefferson. And there's a max stop right there, as a matter of fact. And then around 2 o'clock, we'll start the service in the church. All that's somewhat fluid, depending on how long we take to walk up there.
Great. Well, Steve, thank you so much for being on Transpositive. I really appreciate your time. And if people want to find out more about the event, where can they go to find out about it?
We have a Facebook page, and I should have written that down, and I don't. I have it, but I believe...
it's Transgender Day of Remembrance 2017, yes. PDX.
Yeah, that's what... Yeah, I was hesitant because I didn't want to step on other TDOR or Transgender Day of Remembrance activities, but... I believe that's the one that refers to ours. Yeah.
Yeah, and there's some really great events happening. There's going to be an event at PCC Cascadia, and we're going to have people on KBOO next week to specifically talk about why this event is so important. That it's all about queer and trans people of color, because they're the ones being victimized, and the communities really come together behind the PCC Cascadia event. And they'll have a whole block of time next week just to talk about that event. So,
well, I will look forward to hearing that. And hopefully my wife and I's plan is, and other members of our church, is to try and at least attend other events and show support.
Great. Well, thank you so much for joining us tonight. We're going to go to a quick break and we'll be back with Guinevere. So thank you so much. Thanks
Steve. For having me.
Have a good day.
Have a good evening. Bye-bye.
Come a chameleon. You come and go. Loving would be easy if your colors were like my dreams. Red, gold, and green. Red, gold, and green. Every day is like survival. You're my lover, not my rival.
Okay. All right, and we're back. So Gwen, let's chat some more. It's been a while. How are you doing?
I'm doing really well, Emma.
You're looking great, by the way. I just want to say, if y'all could be down here in studio tonight, I mean, Gwen is just so just looks so fabulous. you look great.
Well, thanks.
What have you been doing?
I've been eating right. Mm-hmm. Hey, no. You know, I've been doing a lot of personal work that I believe reflects on the outside too, and gosh, there's so much to talk about. I'm just trying to filter really quick in my head.
You can think of like a billion things, and it's like you could just start with anything. But I mean, let's talk about like you personally a little bit. Tell me a little bit about your life's journey and how you got to where you are now.
Well, I'm 66. I spent a great part of my life as an entrepreneur in the manufacturing world. I used to have a company that built breweries and distilleries. And, I was married several times, and I tried really hard at that. And, you know, we all know how mm-hmm. that went.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we tried to live another kind of life. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Lots of really amazing experiences, but there came a point where, you know, the veil lifted, and what was real was that I'm transgender, mm-hmm. you know, and yes, I had all of the doubt and the, you know, personal hatred and all of that going on, and it's like the ability and the good fortune to be able to transition and successfully, you know, in
business. Yeah, isn't
business.
That a blessing?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know, I feel really fortunate that I transitioned in a space where it was possible for me, and in our society, even though there's a long ways to go, it's more accessible and more accepted now than it was 20 years ago. So, mm-hmm. And also my friends and family have been beautiful. There's things that I wished I could have done differently. And were I to do it again mm-hmm. in the next life, mm-hmm. I certainly would. But, you know, we live and we learn. And since I have transitioned, I have spent a lot of time just doing personal growth mm-hmm. type work.
Mm-hmm. And that's so important because, I mean, trans people, just tying into T-Dor, the theme of T-Dor too, mm-hmm. you know, trans people are so traumatized. I mean, we've been traumatized in so many ways. We grew up in the wrong gender, and so we had to spend our lives living, well, not everyone feels like they grew up in the wrong gender, but some people do.
Yeah.
And so we had to spend a lot of time like trying to be some gender that we didn't necessarily feel that we were. And then once we transition, we have to deal with like all this negative talk that comes back to us from our society. Like I was driving here tonight and I just thought, you know, oh, somebody would just, they would just say that I'm, you know, I don't know, just all kinds of sick things. You know, it's like people say sick things about us, like there's something wrong with us. And, mm-hmm. and it's like, there's, I mean, we have mm-hmm. to deal with that internalized narrative that like comes to us from popular culture and from sometimes from like ordinary day-to-day experiences. And it's so difficult to like rise above that and to get into like a positive space, you know, for trans women to get into a feminine space, like, and to really sustain that. I mean, to be in that really space of that positivity and that love, you know, and really like trying to look at life with, you know, not let depression overcome us and, you know, to really move forward with our lives. And it looks like you're doing that really well.
Thanks. You know, to tie it into T-Dor, mm-hmm. to this day of remembrance, it's a time to contemplate. You know, I don't know that as a group, and I'm just speaking in really wide generalities here, but as a transgender person and a part of our group, our transgender, you know, community, society, I don't know that we contemplate enough. You know, I don't know that we have patience with ourselves. And like you said, there's so much coming at us. There's so much you can take personally. There's so many opportunities to go just totally haywire inside based on all these outside influences. And taking a moment to stop and contemplate on the 20th or the 19th and the 20th or
for the whole week,
the 19th, 20th, 20th. Yeah, the whole week, maybe the whole month.
Yeah.
To slow down a little bit and take a moment, take a walk, take, you know, pick some flowers. I mean, whatever. Just have the space to stop and contemplate what's going on in your life or in our lives or in the consciousness of everybody around us. And just consider, you know, there's so many facets and levels and parts and pieces to this. It's like, it's so hard just to pick one thing and go, oh, if we all did this, this won't stop. It's like the political climate is a variable for all of us.
Mm-hmm.
And it's I worry less about the political climate than I do about our consciousness as a society. If we don't take the time to stop and contemplate the flowers, you know, the river, the people on the street, and look around us and see how many different people are around us, and every single person has another story, you know, a different story and a different thing in their life, and they're not so much different than we are. But taking the time to do that might lead us into feeling a little more connected, a little less depressed, you know, or a little less overwhelmed with not just the internal conversation, but the external stuff. And, you know,
that is so true.
Right.
I mean, I think we do Tidor in fall. And I mean, for me, as someone who's like within my own personal system that I like live by, you know, this is a time for going in to myself, mm-hmm. for people to go inward into the earth, you know, into the past, into our soul, or I mean, if you don't believe in a soul, just into whatever that is that's you know, that makes you, and to kind of, and it's this is a good time to do it for remembering why we still have more to do, you know. I mean, we have to go inside of ourselves and gather strength. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. Summertime is pride, you know, we all do pride, and it's like, it's a celebration, and there's lots of color and sexuality and lots of energy, you know, not that there can't be great sex in the middle of winter too, but there's a lot of, you know, it's very energetic. I mean, it's definitely the time, mm-hmm. but now mm-hmm. it's right now is the time to go inward, and it's, you know, a remembering of the dead within that tradition, and it's also kind of like going inside as a community too.
Yeah, like reflective, right?
Mm-hmm.
Take a moment, reflect on the trans people that have died.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I know that it's very hard to remember all the names and identities of everybody, or the horrendous manner in which, you know, those some things people. Happen.
Mm-hmm.
But to take it from your heart as a group, take it from your heart of the loss that people have felt and the loss that you might feel in your friends, in your community, or the disconnect. You know, our worst, our enemy is disconnect.
Mm-hmm.
Our enemy is being disconnected. And the more we connect, the more we try. And maybe one aspect of that that's on us that's a little harder is try harder to connect.
Mm-hmm.
You know, try harder to not react. to everything you hear, and, mm-hmm. and somebody takes a look at you or something, and it's like, smile back, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. appreciate them back. And we do our best to stay connected to each other is our really our only hope.
Right, right. Mm-hmm.
You know, when you talk about getting down to it, you can't legislate
compassion,
mm-hmm. empathy, love your neighbor. You can't let, you know, that's not coming from the government.
Mm-hmm.
It's not coming from some people either.
Right. It's definitely not coming from the government right now.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Kind of the opposite.
Mm-hmm.
But what are we going to do? What are we going to go kill people or have huge destructive rants and all this kind of thing? And it's like, think about how much easier and kinder and real it is to be a little reflective, to be more compassionate towards people that don't understand, or be compassionate towards people that have an attitude even.
Mm-hmm.
Because if somebody has an attitude and you reflect their attitude to them, now you have a fight.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And now you have disconnection instead of curiosity or a moment of shift, right?
Mm-hmm.
Even if it's just a little shade, you know, just a little shift,
mm-hmm.
is all it takes to start a movement. And it's like, you know, it's hard to sit back and watch things go on and everything you hear and not want to get up and just start, you know, railing against
mm-hmm.
it.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like, really, that's just expressing our anger and frustration and you know, doubts, fears. And this has been going on in all sections, different sections of our society for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
Now we're feeling this.
Mm-hmm.
Hatred and bigotry and all kinds of
negativity.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And yeah. It's like, maybe it's our job. I know for myself, I know for you, the strength we find within just to admit to being transgender, much less do anything about it.
Mm-hmm.
Those of us that have made this journey, the strength that we find is the strength we need to move forward with, not, you know, in compassion, in using every tool we have in our heart, in our soul, in our being, in our thoughts, whatever you want to label it, to put out kindness and gentleness,
mm-hmm.
you know. And you know, I hate to say this whole thing about turn the other cheek and all that, because sometimes I don't feel that's appropriate.
Mm-hmm.
But as much as we can, not to turn the other cheek, but to reflect openness,
mm-hmm.
connectedness. Is
right.
That, you know, if you're giving me a whole bunch of negativity, I wonder what's going on in your life
to generate that. Right. And that's why we have to cultivate a culture of tolerance and compassion,
mm-hmm.
and openness and forgiveness. Forgiveness is really important too.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we have so much forgiving to do right now because, you know, I mean, we just do. And
yeah.
It's like, it's hard to move forward if you can't forgive. I mean, you don't have to forgive for everything, but if you really want to reach someone, at some point you have to forgive them,
mm-hmm.
and hope that you can move forward with them. And we have so much work to do, but we also really have to just take care of ourselves too. I mean, how can we move forward if we're just angry all the time? I mean, anger just eats at you. It just eats at the inside of you until that's all that's left is your anger. And so it's like, and as trans women, it's so easy to be angry.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we could just be like, oh, I'm just so angry about everything. Just going to, yeah, yeah. And it's like, I mean, but it's, I'm not going to go there. You know, I'm just not going to go there. I'm not going to stay there. That is not an island I want to visit,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Mm-hmm.
So Gwen, we're just about out of time. You're doing life coaching, right?
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah.
And how can people find out more about your life coaching if they wanted to reach you?
Well, I'm on Facebook. I will be putting up a Facebook page for that, but just my name.
It's your name on Facebook is?
Guinevere D'Amplia.
Okay, great, great. Is there any other way people can reach you if they want to find out more about your life coaching? I guess they could write to Trans. I'll tell you what, we'll put up in the show notes at the end of the show. It'll be up like tomorrow or the next day if people want to reach you, if they want to find out more about your life coaching.
Yeah, I know you told me not to say a whole bunch about it, so I'm like, let me see. What can I say? And that's
right. Well, we can't sell products or services because we're nonprofit. But you just did some great life coaching for me and really helped me be in some real positive space for Transgender Day of Remembrance. So thank you so much.
Yeah, and I hope that we've reached out and been able to connect with some people. And let's do this more often.
Definitely. Thank you. You're looking so fabulous. And I'm really happy to have you down here. So we're going to take a really quick break, and then we're going to be back for more of our friends and family series with Chris and Adrian.
I felt all flushed with fever, embarrassed by the crowd. I felt he found my letters and read each one out loud. I prayed that he would finish, but he just kept right on, strumming my pain with his fingers.
Welcome to Transpositive. This is Emma Lugo, and we are continuing our friends and family series. We are talking to friends and family of trans, genderqueer, gender non-binary, and intersex people, and kind of getting their perspective. We want to find out, what's it like to be with someone who transitions? Why did you stay with them? Why did you leave them? What's your relationship like? You know, that sort of thing. What are some of the issues that people don't hear about that they need to know about that's part of being in a long-term relationship with someone who's trans. So we are very lucky here today to have Adrian. Adrian is an artist and a metalsmith, and she is in a long-term relationship with Gabriel. And Adrian has come down solo tonight to talk about her relationship with Gabriel. They've been together for 13 years, and they've been married for 8 years. And Gabriel is a trans woman, and they have a great relationship. So welcome, Adrian.
Hi, thank you.
Great. So, Adrian, tell me a little bit about yourself first. How did you and Gabriel meet?
We met in Texas at college together. We were at Texas A&M together, two liberals in a very conservative pond. And we found each other and really clicked and decided to move away from Texas together and ended up in Oregon.
Oh, neat. Now, where is Texas A&M?
It's in central Texas. If you draw a triangle between Dallas and Houston and Austin, it's like right in the middle of that triangle.
Oh, okay. So it's like, it's kind of is it in the hill country?
It's right on the edge.
Right. Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. And you were both liberals, and is it kind of conservative?
It's a very conservative environment. Texas A&M was an all-male military school until the 1970s.
Oh, yeah.
And the George W. Bush Presidential Library is on the campus there. So it's It's pretty red.
Wasn't there like a big shooting there or something? I mean, not the Austin shooting.
There was a bonfire that happened in like
1999. Yes,
killed like 18 people, I think.
Yeah, and wow.
Yeah, they don't do the bonfire anymore.
Wow. So when you first met Gabrielle, did you know she was trans?
No, she didn't either at that point. She says, looking back on that time, that she just didn't have the vocabulary. She knew that she was different. I knew that she was different. But I don't think either one of us had been exposed in such a, like, we both grew up in the South, and that's just, it just wasn't talked about anything other than, like, cisgendered, heteronormative lifestyles.
Right. Did you grow up religious?
I did. My grandfather, my maternal grandfather, is a very conservative Bible Baptist preacher, and I have a very huge family, and they're all very similar, and they all believe very similarly. And then there's me. I like to think of myself as the purple sheep of the family.
The purple sheep, yeah.
And Gabrielle comes from a smaller family, and it's much more diverse, even though there's only about 35 of them or so total. But they walk all kinds of lives.
Oh, wow.
And it's a completely different family situation.
Wow, that's really neat. Yeah, I mean, coming myself from, like, moving here from the South, I mean, I understand how pervasive, like, Pentecostal culture is in the South. And it's really, it can be a barrier to transition, definitely. It's usually not I mean, it can be used as a tool to transition, but it's usually kind of more of a barrier for it.
I think just lack of information, too. You know, we're both in our early 30s, and so we were kind of like, we're on the very edge of millennialism.
Right.
And so we were that kind of first generation that had access to the internet kind of from an early age, but it was still new. And like, I didn't dare look at things I wasn't supposed to look at on the internet. But we didn't know that there were other options for us. I had started dating women on and off in high school, but just very like secretively.
Oh, okay.
And through college, just maybe one or two, mostly men, though, because that was easy and that was what was expected. But Gabrielle was different than all of the other men that I had ever dated. She was more sensitive and more feminine, but not in like a effeminate kind of way. She seemed to be more in touch with a level of her feelings that I had never met in another guy.
Chris, we've talked to Adrian, and so now let's hear some of your story. Chris, you are 43.
I am.
And you're a realtor, and your partner is
Alexana.
Alexana, and she has been married for 20 years.
That's correct.
And you've been together for 25 years. And Alexana started transitioning about 3 years ago?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, great. Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, welcome. So tell me a little bit about yourself.
Well,
how did you guys meet?
So we met in college. I was a very fresh 19, just turned. I was also freshly out of my first year of college at a very conservative Nazarene school. And I had just transferred to Cal Poly Pomona in LA. And I met Allie on the first day of school. And I use female pronouns to talk about history, but our eyes locked. She was sitting on the floor, and we were both early for our class, and I was sitting on the stairs, and we just looked at each other, and it was like, boom, that was it for mm-hmm. me. And took a little while to talk to her because she's shy, mm-hmm. and but I'm not. So. Mm-hmm. So I kind of cornered her, and I guess that was the beginning. So
yeah. Wow. So did she know at the time that she was trans, or did you know she was trans at the time?
I did not. She was just figuring it out. She had grown up in East LA in an area where there just wasn't the vocabulary for it, you know, and she knew she was different always, and I think her first thought was, well, is it that I'm gay? I don't understand. I like girls, but there's clearly something different about me, and I don't know what. So she knew, but she didn't know what, and it wasn't until college that she had a psychology class where they talked about what it meant to be transgender, and the light just flashed mm-hmm. for her. Mm-hmm. And that was right around the time that we met. I think... it was probably easier for her to, you know, you hear hoof prints, why think zebra, mm-hmm. you know, so it was like, I'm sure it'll just go away. And, you know, we loved each other. We clicked. We had a great relationship from the get-go. So I think she thought, she legitimately thought that it would just go away if she were happy enough, if she loved enough. If she was loved enough, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. we know that's not true.
And so the school you said you met at Nazarene, where's that?
Point Loma in San Diego.
Okay.
In high school, I was very, very, I was out there on the religious spectrum. Mm-hmm. I was going to save the world. And I don't mean like feed the poor. I mean like convert people. Mm-hmm. Really sorry if you knew me then. mm-hmm. Not like that anymore.
And was she pretty religious too?
She grew up Catholic. Yeah. Okay. And mm-hmm. I think what attracted both of us to that was just the idea of having a structure of principled behavior. Mm-hmm. You know, a sense of a desire to be good in the larger sense, to do good, to
Yeah. For either of you, has your religion been like a barrier or a tool for being able to, you know, go through the process of either supporting someone who's transitioning or transitioning? Has that been something that you've stuck with?
She is in a much different place than I am in that I think I cling to it a little more, but it's in sort of a subversive way that I do. I honestly think it's a little more like Jesus actually was, because Jesus was totally radical, and mm-hmm. Jesus went to the people that nobody else would go to mm-hmm. and embraced them and said, you matter. That's my reading of the Bible. Mm-hmm. And I frankly don't have an interest in another kind of reading of the Bible. And mm-hmm. so I feel like it's very much in line with my core beliefs of it is our purpose, whether it's Judeo-Christian or anything else. I feel religion is like a language. It's just what we, you know, for me, it's Christianity because I was born here in America. If I were born somewhere else, it would be a different religion, but mm-hmm. equal value. And I feel that the bottom line is to be good to each other and take care of each other and love each other. So mm-hmm. to me, it is truly a spiritual thing. And I'm almost to a militant extent of, we will love each other and we will protect each other. And I don't want to hear it. Right. If that's not your view, you don't want me to hear it.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's bring Adrian back into the conversation now, and let's have kind of a shared conversation here. Welcome back, Adrian.
Hi.
So, Adrian, you, when I was talking to you earlier, you said that you identify as queer and mm-hmm. pan. And when I talked to you, Chris, you said that you don't really know, you don't really have a category. You're not heterosexual, but you don't really have a category. So let's just talk about that for a minute in terms of, like, if you're with someone and they transition, and you also mentioned before that maybe you were bi.
Mm-hmm.
like before you mm-hmm. met. How did you identify Chris before you met Alexana?
Straight. I grew up in a pretty conservative family, and I just never really questioned. It was comfortable enough for me that worked and okay. Mm-hmm. Never thought about it. But I met Allie at 19, mm-hmm. you know, so different circumstances, things, you know, I might have chosen other paths or at least investigated other paths. I think that in a lot of ways it has not been the vast breach in terms of my own sexuality that you would think it would be if I were totally straight. So that's mm-hmm. kind of part of what tipped me off. And I too always felt different. I feel like I'm almost in some things about me I think are very feminine, and other things I think are pretty masculine. So I've always felt a little bit like the end result is almost androgynous
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
for who I am.
And Adrian, you identify as queer, pan. Mm-hmm. Before you met Gabriel, how did you identify?
I was pretty stoutly in the bisexual camp. All of the women I had dated were very feminine, and all of the men that I had dated were pretty masculine. And I used to say that, like, I was bisexual because I preferred, like, the ends of the spectrum. But then as Gabriel started transitioning, I also started my own personal transition with her, and she just kind of blew my brain open, and I just realized that there was this huge middle section of the population that I had just not noticed, maybe. Mm-hmm. and then I started noticing them more and more, and then I started also just maybe drifting myself into that middle category as well. Growing up in the South, it was kind of like being a woman meant this. You wore your makeup, you shave your legs, you shave your underarms, you don't leave the house without doing all of those things every day. I did not appreciate that. And I was a tomboy. All my friends were guys growing up. I was one of the guys. I could beat up all the guys. And so there were a lot of parts about me that were really masculine. I'm also very outspoken. I'm usually a really loud person in a crowd. I can take control. I have a lot of opinions about a lot of things. And those were also not considered feminine things where I came from. Like, you're supposed to be quiet and passive. And I've never been, I don't know how to be passive. Mm-hmm. And I danced with my dad at my wedding. Like, he just kept saying, "You're leading again." I don't know how not to lead. So I've, watching Gabe finally embrace who she is, it was so inspiring to me. And I didn't know that there was a part of me that I had not been embracing. Mm-hmm. I had just kind of been ignoring that part. I was always different. I always had like crazy hair and weird rainbow suspender. Like, I was always a very colorful, standout-ish person, but I felt like I was always doing that as a way to like rebel against this like tight box that people were trying to put me in. And then like when I was just like, I don't even feel like there's a box anymore. I don't even see boxes anymore. I'm just going to be me. And so we both like transitioned into the people that we are together, which was a difficult process. Mm-hmm. It wasn't easy. But God, it's so much better on this end.
Mm-hmm. 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 Yeah. So, Chris, you mentioned that that Allie knew that she was trans like maybe 20 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
But and when I was talking to Adrian, Adrian mentioned that one of the things that really made a big difference for Gabe in terms of transitioning was that was the internet.
Mm-hmm.
The internet was like
yes.
your own. And how was that for you and for Allie? I mean, is Allie like I know like within the trans community there's kind of like, I mean, like Allie's story sounds a lot like my story. I mean, I have to admit.
Yeah.
I understand, because it's like I knew I was trans, mm-hmm. you know, like 20, 25 years ago. I mean, I knew I was trans since I was a little kid, but
yeah,
but when I met, like, you know, but anyways, so what role did that play? Like, how did Allie come to the point where she was finally ready to transition, like 3 years ago? How did she tell you, and what led up to that?
She wasn't ready. She actually tried to tell me, oh, I think our daughter was just tiny, and she's 14 now. Mm-hmm. So it was late at night. We were talking in bed. It was in the dark. I mean, I feel like, honestly, if you need to have a sensitive conversation, lie in bed, turn the lights out. Because mm-hmm. there's something about it. And we were talking about some stresses in our lives, and she said, I just really wish we could just move away and live as two women. And I just was like, what? Mm-hmm. And I remember kind of hyperventilating, just breathing. That's all I can remember, just gasping. Mm-hmm. And I remember feeling like this gaping maw had opened beneath me, and I was in a free fall. And what about my family? And what about our children who were just tiny? And what about the neighbors? And what about our friends? And what about, you know, it was like all of a sudden it just starts firing in your head. And she immediately saw this and was like, I'm kidding. Mm-hmm. And I look back at that and I think, you idiot, to myself. You know, nobody kids like that.
Right.
But it was so big. And I was young and not terribly strong yet. And I honestly couldn't have handled it, I think, at that time. And she retracted it. She said she was kidding. And I was okay to say, really? You're kidding? You're sure? You're really kidding? Okay. Okay. All right. And that was it. And it didn't get discussed. And at that time, she just sort of put it in a metaphorical box and put it up on the shelf and said, that's it. This is how I'm going to live out this life, because mm-hmm. I love Chris. I love my family. I don't want anything to happen. This is the bet I made. Here I am. Mm-hmm. And in 2014, I was going back through our Amazon purchase history. She had always been super protective of the Prime account, which was so weird to me, because we share everything. Mm-hmm. We work together. We live together. We're like, you can't find where one starts and the other ends, and mm-hmm. she's possessive over the Prime account. And I was going back looking through for a refrigerator filter replacement, and I found some clothing that I knew I had not bought. And I looked at that, and interestingly, the idea that she had bought it for somebody else never entered my mind. Mm-hmm. I just know her too. She just wouldn't. Mm-hmm. And I called her down. We both worked at home at the time, and I showed her my screen, and I said, do you know anything about this? And she was just dead silent, and then she said, no. And I said, are you sure? And she said, yeah. And I said, okay.
She's not a very good liar.
No, she's a terrible liar. That's the irony, is that in all of our 25 years, or then 23, she has been so honest with me. Mm-hmm. Everything was open, yeah, except that one thing. Yeah. And I just could feel it. And I said, either I need to call them and report we were hacked, or you know about this. And I could see just the terror on her face. I could see her watching our lives implode. And it was like, I mean, this sounds really weird and woo-woo and feathers and light and all that, but I almost feel like in that moment, when I doubt that there's something bigger, I think of that moment, because I really feel like someone pushed me out of my own driver's seat and said, just shut up and just let me handle this for a minute. Zip it. And I took her hand and I said, it's going to be okay. We're going to sit down and we're going to talk about this, and it's going to be okay. Mm-hmm. And she wanted to flee. She wanted to go back up mm-hmm. to her desk. And I said, no, you can't. You cannot go anywhere. Mm-hmm. Let's just sit down. And we did, and that started the long conversation, and little by little I started learning. And at that point in our lives, I was strong enough and I was ready. And it was like she revealed to me that she has been in a prison all her life, and she handed me the key and said, "For you, I will stay, because that's who you married, and I don't want to deny you the life that you signed up for."
Mm-hmm.
And it was like saying, so now she's given me the key to her cell, and if I leave her there, I am her jailer.
Mm-hmm.
And that is no relationship.
Yeah.
So I just knew in my heart from that point, there is but one answer, and that is to transition, and we'll work it out.
Mm-hmm. Wow. That's so cool. What about you, Adrian? How did Gabe tell you?
So I remember having a conversation with her. Again, I also use her in the past. So sitting on the couch with her.
It's kind of a mark, isn't it? For you, like, isn't there a point when you drop the male pronouns entirely?
I actually have a problem, like, using male pronouns for like my dad, like
I know,
I second guess myself all the time with like everybody's pronouns. I live in this like pronoun purgatory. So I remember we were dating, and we were sitting on a couch, and we were in that point of dating where you just want to sit across from each other and just tell each other everything and ask each other everything. And, you know, so we were like, so what's your deepest secret? Mm-hmm. And, you know, all of those fun, you know, amorous conversations. And she said that when she was younger, she used to try on her mom's clothes, mm-hmm. and that her dad had caught her doing it once. And
all right, we are back. We're back for the last 2 minutes of Transpositive. That was an interview with Chris and Adrian. The whole interview can be found on the Transpositive WordPress website on the podcast. And thank you so much to Chris and Adrian for coming in and talking about that. Sorry we couldn't do the whole thing, but the entirety of the interview is on the Transpositive WordPress website. It'll be up tomorrow. So in the last 2 minutes, I just want to list off some of the Transgender Day of Remembrance events that are happening here in Portland this month. I'm going to start on November 19th. November 19th, there is the Transgender Day of Remembrance service and memorial, and it's going to start at Terry Schrunk Plaza. That's 364 Southwest Madison in downtown Portland. And it's going to start at 12:30 and go until about 2. And then there's a march to First United Methodist Church where there'll be an interfaith service. The next day, on November 20th at PCC Cascadia, that's the Portland Community College Cascadia campus over on Killingsworth in North Portland. That's the big event. That's going to be the Transgender Day of Remembrance service organized mostly by the Q Center and by trans activists. That's going to be at 705 North Killingsworth. That's November 20th, 6 p.m. to 8 p.m., and I really encourage you to go out to that. Also, that same day, there is a Transgender Day of Remembrance service at the Multnomah Friends Meeting House. That is at 4312 Southeast Stark. That's in Portland over on the east side, kind of on the way to Mount Tabor. And that is going to be on November 20th from 7 p.m. to 9 p.m. Also on November 20th, there is a Transgender Day of Remembrance vigil, and that's going to be in Pioneer Square in downtown Portland. That's Monday, November 20th from 7 p.m. to 8 p.m. And that's organized by someone named Harlequin. So that's going to be over in Pioneer Square. And finally, at the Pacific Northwest College of Art, there's going to be an event honoring Transgender Day of Remembrance. That's Pacific Northwest College of Art, and that's going to be at 511 Northwest Broadway.
That's November 20th from 6:30 p.m. to 8 p.m. So as you can see, there's a lot going on. I hope that you will tune in next week to listen to some of the organizers of the event at PCC Cascadia. And thank you so much for joining us this week on Transpositive. We'll see you next month.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Big Waters Falling Up Tour, Tuesday, November 14th at 8 p.m. at the Paris Theater in Portland. Portland locals Big Water will be closing out their Falling Up Tour, featuring special guest Danielle Betancourt on the violin. Big Water will also be sponsoring a feeding for houseless people through AMA Global Care and the Paris Theater. Again, that's Big Water's Falling Up Tour, Tuesday, November 14th at 8 p.m. at the Paris Theater, 6 Southwest 3rd Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Outside the Frame's film screening of Leaving Home on Monday, November 13th at 6 p.m. at Portland Center Stage at the Armory in Portland. Outside the Frame will be hosting a special gala screening of new films by and with youth experiencing homelessness in Portland. The evening will also feature a Q&A with the filmmakers, and a Lifetime Achievement Award will be presented to Tia Plimpton to recognize her decades of work and mentorship with homeless youth. Again, that's Outside the Frame's film screening of Leaving Home on Monday, November 13th at 6 p.m. at Portland Center Stage at the Armory, 128 Northwest.